Value Protection, a.k.a. Caps and Collars. This is Brock.
And this is John.
So, John, why do companies worry about value protection in a stock-for-stock deal?
Well, it's the stock prices of parties to a stock-for-stock deal can be subject to some pretty wild gyrations between signing and closing. Most of these deals involve a publicly traded buyer, and public companies announce their deals when they sign up. And what usually happens to the buyer's stock when it announces a deal? Well, it usually goes down. This doesn't always happen, but over the years, it's sort of been the market's most common reaction to a stock deal. And there are several reasons for this, but the most basic reason is the law of supply and demand. You've just announced that you're going to put more stock on the market, so you've increased the supply, and that has a depressive effect on the stock price. Now, it's not like you're not getting anything in exchange for it, but one of the things that the market knows, because history shows, is that buyers have a tendency to overpay, and that executing a merger is hard work. So in terms of the value proposition, the market tends to be a little bit skeptical from what they hear from the buyers. Also, and this is an important factor in a lot of deals, is there are a bunch of folks out there, arbitrageurs, who know how the stocks of buyers and sellers typically react to deal announcements and what goes on between signing and closing, and they try to use that information to make a buck by taking long and short positions in the party's stock, and that can amplify the volatility that companies can experience between signing and closing.
And who typically bears the risk of a decline in the buyer's stock price?
Well, that's what gets negotiated. At one extreme, you might have a fixed exchange ratio deal. Let's say the buyer agreed to pay 2 shares of its stock for each share of the seller's stock. If the buyer's price was $20 a share at signing, but fell to $15 at closing, the seller would still get 2 shares of the buyer's stock. Of course, if it went up to $30 a share, it would still get 2 shares of the buyer's stock. But remember, typically the market pressure is usually in the opposite direction. The exact opposite of this is what's known as a floating exchange rate deal. Here, if the buyer's stock is worth $20 on day one, then 2 shares are going to be worth $40, and that's what the buyer agrees to deliver at closing, stock worth $40. If the stock drops to $15, then the buyer would add another $10 worth of its stock to the consideration. So in that scenario, the buyer is the one who is bearing most of the risk, and the other extreme, it'd be the seller that's bearing most of the risk. But that's essentially negotiating between those two poles is typically what happens.
And what does the negotiation process typically look like?
Well, usually, again, there's some form of risk sharing that people start batting around. For example, you may start out with a fixed exchange ratio deal, but there may be negotiations for a collar that provides that a seller will always get a certain fixed level of value if the stock price declines. For example, they may say, okay, I'll take a 1-for-1 fixed exchange ratio, but if the value of that stock dips between $15 a share, I want to make sure that I get at least $15 a share in value. And the buyer may ask for something on the upside if the value of its stock increases, but between those two points the exchange ratio might be fixed. Until you bump into the top collar or the bottom collar, you're going to have the 1-for-1 fixed exchange ratio. There's a floating exchange ratio. The buyer might negotiate a cap on the total number of shares that it issues. These arrangements can get extremely complicated with all sorts of variations of caps and collars and other arrangements, and I don't want to give the impression that I'm the world's foremost expert on these things. These are way above my pay grade in many situations because a lot of them are determined with a lot of input from the investment bankers and a lot of back and forth. And when these are included, they can certainly be they can be fairly simple or they can be very, very complex depending on the companies involved, their stock, and the market situation.
And what about walkaway rights? What are those?
Well, a walkaway right is something that gives a party the ability to do just that. It may be negotiated in conjunction with caps and collars and various other value protection mechanisms, but the seller may ultimately say to the buyer, look, if we are not going to be able to get at least X dollars out of this deal in value, we want to be able to walk away from the deal. So that'll be baked into the contract that if at some point the value of the transaction drops below X, then the seller may have the right to walk away from the transaction.
How about a fill or kill provision? What is that?
Well, that's what you typically will see, or many times you'll see if there is a walkaway scenario baked into the agreement. It basically gives the buyer another bite at the apple. Fill or kill provision allows the buyer to say to a seller, "Look, we'll give you the walkaway right, but if the value dips below the walkaway, we want the right to increase the value of the deal. We don't want to commit to it, but we want the right to do that. And if we do pony up, then you'll have to continue to go through with the deal."
Great stuff. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.